Australia's an island nation surrounded by many protected marine parks. However, as this number increases, your research has found that the number of threatened species and the health of marine systems is in decline. Why is this occurring?
Well, Sean, I think that that what we're seeing is a global pattern that's being seen in many places around the world, where as we're starting to use more and more parts of the marine environment, we're starting to see more and more impacts occurring and more cumulative impacts, where there's more than one activity occurring, and we're seeing the impacts of multiple different sorts of activities on multiple different parts of an ecosystem. And those things are starting to have a significant impact on the way that we see our marine environment and the sorts of services that we can draw from it.
Surprisingly, you've found that marine biodiversity is more commonly found in places with high human activity. Not like that might make these sites more accessible, perhaps easier to maintain, but is there certain difficulties and risks to that?
Well, I think part of it is that the places that people actually like to go to are the places where there's high biodiversity. And we often see that in our coasts. I thought that, you know, the obvious example was the one you just gave it in your intro around the Great Barrier Reef, where it's a really high biodiversity location. And people are drawn to those locations, and there's a lot of resources that we can get from them. So it creates an inevitable conflict where the places that there's lots of biodiversity are also the places where we're getting a whole heap of other services coming out of.
So how do we actually balance that conflict in terms of human accessibility and what's best for these marine ecosystems? Can we balance it at all?
Yeah, I think we can. I think there's evidence to suggest that it's possible. The downside is it's not easy, and we need to use a variety of different ways of doing it. Protected areas are one of the ways, and they're certainly one of the easiest to understand. But there's also a whole heap of other approaches and techniques that can be applied that would allow us to actually keep on doing some of the things that we want to keep on doing without having the sorts of impacts that we've seen in the past. And I think that's the thing that we want to emphasize, is that there's a much broader suite of ways that we can use the environment than just the ones that we're talking about right now.
I don't know if we can unpack them all, but what are some of these approaches that you might suggest?
So the one that is, I think, has the best evidence around it to say that it actually works is an approach that has actually been used in fisheries. And fisheries for a long time has been seen as something that has quite a negative impact on the environment. But over the last really 20 years, Australia's been leading a lot of the research and development into how you manage fisheries in a much more sustainable way. And that's had substantial impacts on our fisheries. And the best example that we've seen is in southern bluefin tuna, where the populations are actually increasing substantially from when these things come in. And it really focuses around three main things. It focuses around, we need to know what the status of the environment is, what's happening in the environment. So we just need to know about that. We need to have some sort of agreement about how we're going to analyze the information that we're getting on the environment so that we are able to actually make sense of what's actually occurring. And finally, we need to have a set of rules about how we respond, and we need to agree on those rules before we actually have to invoke them. So it's no use us getting to a crisis point and saying, oh no, we have to do something. We have to agree before we get to that crisis point on the actions that we're going to do and what we're going to do to change those actions. And those three things are the real simple building blocks to the way that we've started to manage fisheries. And the way that we think we should actually be starting to manage all of biodiversity. So we should be thinking about these things for all of biodiversity.
And that was just my next point I wanted to touch on, actually, the analysis aspect of this one. I mean, look, you go to an area, you can count more fish in it than there were 6 months ago. I imagine it's probably doing pretty well. But do we have a sort of a guaranteed way of understanding what's working and what isn't in some of these situations? If we go with one of these methods, do we have a real way of deciding what's actually working?
That's actually one of the places where Australia really leads the world. We have some of the best quantitative marine scientists in the world, and a lot of the techniques that are used globally in management of all sorts of parts of the environment were ones that had come out of Australia. So we really do have a lot of experience in those in knowing how to analyze information that we get. Probably the weakest things that we are doing at the moment is the monitoring side of things, working out and just understanding how the environment's changing, and also those management rules, so agreeing beforehand. Those are two things that are actually the more difficult things and often require more money to actually achieve.
Mm. And just finally, I mean, we mentioned the Great Barrier Reef, of course, as one of those key examples, as you say, that's terrific for biodiversity, but also greatly, greatly popular for human accessibility. We've seen this week, this massive bleaching event, the third massive bleaching event in 5 years in that kind of area. I would imagine these kinds, if we're going to bring in some of these changes, if we're going to bring in a set system and a set system of analysing these changes, I mean, it kind of needs to be happening yesterday. Do we really have enough momentum on this one right now to lock something in that will see our marine ecosystems actually saved?
I think climate is probably one of the biggest long-term pressing issues that we have to deal with. And I know that there is a lot of research that's going on across a really broad range of aspects around how to deal with climate and how we can mitigate and mitigate impacts. I think that we do have the time to do it, but we do need to actually act quite quickly in order to see these sorts of the changes that we need to have occurring as soon as possible.
Well, Piers, I do appreciate you joining us this morning on this one.
Thank you very much, Sean.